Hello, greetings and salutations. Thank you so much for tuning into Quantum Conversations, aka QC. So, here we are with yet another episode, and this time we're going to have a bit of a kvetch session. Yes, we'll be airing grievances, pet peeves, and the many, many things that both vex and perplex us, although hopefully this will also be a productive rant. And while we may get a bit hot under the collar or passionate about certain things, the aim is not just to get a few things off of our chest, but also to see how these banes and annoyances actually correlate to bigger malaises in our modern world, and where, despite broader consensus that these things are, at best, a poor reflection of certain demographics, and at worst, causes of significant problems, it seems that matters become more compounded due to a general unwillingness, or perhaps an inability, to address these issues meaningfully. As has become something of a QC mantra, the aim of the program is to engage in meaningful conversations which pushes beyond what is written or stated within established and controlled narratives, and consider what may be overlooked, not taken into account, conveniently omitted, or intentionally redacted. If we can come into a space and leave it having learned something new, perhaps changed our ideas or opinions on even just one thing we've previously not been willing to do, or at the very least, be open to entertain a different way of looking at things, then that is how we can grow personally, mindfully, and spiritually. But before we sail along on this mini rantathon, a quick round of intros. My name is Nyusha. I'm the show's brainchild, finicky editor, hopefully coherent host, and questioner-in-chief. And with me is my pal Paul, who also happens to be my editing sorcerer, the man behind our lovely theme music and QC's co-questioner-in-chief. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Nyusha. How's it going today?
Yeah, not too shabby. How about things on your end?
Oh, not too bad. Thanks. Not too bad. The air has gotten very dry, so you may hear it in my voice.
Oh, yes. It's giving you that slightly more like, you know, what is it that we let rusty sort of sexy smokers?
Yes. I've just smoked a carton of cigarettes and this is my voice now.
Yes, very.
Yeah. No, it's always great to be here with you. So excited for another episode.
Likewise. Thank you. Well, so Paul, today and I, the two of us, we're going to have it out. Well, no, not with each other. No, we're going to release a few pressure valves, and get things off of our chest. You know, things that we'll talk about, things that grind our gears, make us shake our heads, and, you know, or things that have become sort of social pet peeves. And while I think many of you out there will be able to relate to some of our lamentations and grievances, perhaps a few of you might even unwittingly be the cause of said consternations. So I would be remiss if I simply had a stop with listing what just simply pisses us off. As always, over here at QC, we're digging a little bit deeper to see if all of these seemingly daily microaggressions, these little acts of inconsideration or other irksome behaviors, aren't maybe an outcrop of other factors. Perhaps these things directly or indirectly point to a bigger unresolved and underlying issue that seems to be so pernicious and pervasive in our society nowadays. So we might just get a sense of how deep the rabbit warren goes by asking questions and, with Paul's feedback, unpick some of the knotted threads that seem to make our day-to-day societal cohabitation, especially in larger cities, taxing and tiring. So let's just jump in there, shall we, Paul? What's up there currently? Yeah. What's up there currently with your biggest bothers or your pet hates and frustrations?
Well, as you know, I'm not a huge ranter or a pet peeve person, but of course I'm human. And,
no, get out.
I'm sure I tend to be a little more glass half full, but I go out into the world, so I'm sure I can find
you
a few things occasionally.
You brave, brave soul. I would say, Paul, that even though you are definitely what one would say pretty mellow, you know, you're pretty mellow about a lot of things, but I am sure that there are things that even for the most calm and, you know, non-hot-blooded types like yourself, there are probably moments where you too might just flip your lid.
Sure, sure. And of course, a lot of it does have to do with going out into public. I suppose one thing that really sort of, you know, gets me going is people's maybe have a lack of self-awareness in public to the fact that there are others around. And, you know, it could be something as small as those who just leave their shopping cart floating out in the parking lot in the middle of a space just to ding your car. It could also be the person inside the store who is not considerate of others and, you know, blocking the aisle, that sort of thing. It's like, what world are you in? Why do you think it's okay to block this whole aisle when there's about six of us here waiting to get down it? So I was in one of those big box warehouse stores here in the U.S. and a parent and child were, instead of pulling over for sampling some of the food that they like to give out at these stores, they just sort of blocked the whole aisle and took up the whole space while they enjoyed their little samples. And the lady working there actually started to pull their cart out of the way because she saw several of us waiting with, you know, perplexed looks on our faces. And so she pulls the cart out of the way and the lady sort of chastises her for it, you know, gets mad at her for being considerate.
Right.
And I was just like, this is a great example for your child. Anyway.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of like people are just going through life with only their sort of selfish little world in mind. That really gets me going for one thing.
Mm-hmm. Did you, like in that instance, did you or somebody else not say anything at all?
I said, excuse me. And then when she didn't reply, the lady working there actually sort of pulled her cart to the side and, you know, then she got upset with the lady. So I was like, oh, you're just a peach, aren't you? Anyhow,
what else?
So things like that. A big one for me is trying to go to a concert these days. Mm-hmm. Big music fan, of course. And just, you know, I can understand getting a few photos or a quick video of the artists performing, but it just seems to be, especially say if you're in like a general admission situation where you're, you know, standing on a floor watching with people just shoot their videos right up, you know, they shoot their phones, mobile devices right up above their heads and just start filming away. And you almost have to watch the concert through their phones. It's just like, you guys,
why did I pay for this?
Exactly. This incredible artist came here to perform for us and we get to see it with our own eyes and hear it with our ears. And you're going to never watch this video most likely on your phone or you're going to upload it right to YouTube or something. And it's kind of like, why are you here? Why are you not enjoying this in person?
So, yeah.
It's not even in the past, I feel like people would have said, oh, I'm sorry. Am I blocking your view? It's just, you know, a legion of people who will just shoot their phones right above their head and just film the whole show. So yeah, it's a bit sad to me and inconsiderate.
Yeah. I mean, it would also feel like why bother going to a live concert anymore if that's what you have to put up with, you know,
exactly.
Because you're paying to see the live music, but what you end up doing is you feel like you have a crowd of people who are more interested in capturing something so that they can later on show friends or upload it on social media and say, look what I did,
right,
saw, you know, and then you go, well, you didn't really experience anything because you were too busy like filming. But also, you know, I'm just wondering why something like this wouldn't be addressed by either the artists or their managers or, you know, the theaters, the stages and venues that are having these things there.
Sure, sure. Now, there have been some instances. I know there are a couple of artists. I went to see Jack White perform, and he had a policy where they gave you a little bag that they lock your phone in, which you keep, but you can't use your phone during the show or while you're there. Now, there's a special area where you can go if you have to make a call or check on something. You know, you can go into that area, use your phone, then, you know, they'll give you the pouch back and lock it up for you again when you return to your seats. But that was a fantastic experience, I have to say, because everybody was just present. Mm-hmm. Everybody was watching the show, enjoying. And, you know, generally an artist or band will the crowd is part of the equation. You know, the show is dependent on each other. So with the feedback they get, they'll put that much more back into the show. And, you know, you don't feel like you have to look down at your phone. You don't have to see what time it is. You don't have to check your emails. Mm-hmm. So it was really nice. It was like, oh, wow, this is fun.
Who checks their emails at a concert? I
may have in between songs a couple times, but it's like, why am I doing that? I'm not perfect myself.
Good on Jack White for sort of, or his, you know, PR or I guess managing team to sort of come up with that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Cause it's a completely different experience, mm-hmm. and just far better. So, you know, it may seem a bit punitive or something to take people's phones away, but at the same time, it was just a much better overall experience. So
yeah,
not sure if that'll catch on. And I think there are some comedians who have done it also for their concerts. Also, they don't want their new works to be, sort of recorded and put out there into the world before they're ready.
Right.
So I thought that was a nice solution, but you know, it's just a bummer when people are just worried about videoing a show. Yeah. So
besides, you know, sort of people's behaviors, let's say in a concert, what other kinds of things sort of publicly, or it doesn't have to be public, they could just be general pet peeves that kind of really frustrate you?
Yeah. Well, I would say this could probably be another entire episode itself, but just mobile devices in general. Mm-hmm. It is kind of a bummer to be out on the street and just, you know, people are not even watching where they're going. They've got their heads down, sort of not paying attention. It's like, mm-hmm. why mm-hmm. was this designed to work out this way? You know, so I'm sure we could do several episodes on mobile phones in general. But
oh yeah,
it is sad to see people's heads down, not watching where they're going. And also, like, why do we need this stimulation 24 hours a day? People just need something to, like, what happened to being still? What happened to being quiet? What happened to just walking, taking a walk? And, you know,
well, we have sensory overload all the time, mm-hmm. you know, especially in big cities. And I think there are studies there to show that, you know, screen time can become very addicting. And mm-hmm. it certainly is a big advantage for advertisers. It's a big advantage for people who are promoting product or want you to do their game, you know, video games or whatever you call it. All of these things are meant to keep us occupied. Mm-hmm. We can definitely probably address that in another episode, because that is something that gets then taken advantage of, and it becomes there by design. So when we're distracted, when we're completely saturated with all kinds of information and things that grab our attention, then we don't actually sit there and think. And that works very well. That works very well for you know, our slightly quasi dystopian society that we're heading into. You know, a thinking public is a dangerous public.
Very good point. Very good point. Yes, the lack of critical thinking that goes on. And it's like you say, when you've got no space or no time to sort of think critically about things, and things are just constantly flying at you, it's mm-hmm. it's no wonder.
Yeah. And the more you're bombarded with stuff, the more it's like, I don't know. It's the same thing as like when you are overwhelmed by choices when you go into a shop. You just go, I wanted just a dark chocolate, but now they're 25 varieties of dark chocolate, and I don't know which one to choose, you know?
I don't need to have anxiety about this decision.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm having anxiety. I just want this small piece of dark chocolate.
Please.
Yeah, exactly. So it works the same way. So you just kind of just go, I'll just do it. I'll just give it to me, you know, take my money.
Right. Please. Just the first one I saw, I'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of, you know, the mobile phone stuff, I mean, I think that is really probably the one that seems to be the most pervasive in terms of connecting it with really poor behavior. It's easy because it sucks us in. And you see it with small children when parents mm-hmm. give their phone to keep them busy. Right. And then you see it with fully grown adults. It doesn't matter what age. And I don't know. Anyway, sorry, I didn't want to disrupt your flow.
No,
what else?
Okay.
What else?
Yeah, so I suppose somewhat relating to that too is just the nature of sort of grabbing people's attention with clickbait sort of headlines. It seems mm-hmm. that, you know, clickbait in the past was just something you would see, what wasn't called clickbait, but it was sort of maybe a tabloid newspaper or, you know, sort of sensationalized kind of magazine or newspaper or news source, where it seems like that has become the normal. You have a journalist who hopefully writes a story, and then you've got maybe a copy editor. It's like, what can get us the most clicks to title this story? And it's very misleading as far mm-hmm. as what the story is supposed to be about, or, you know, it's just sort of like focusing on things that aren't correct, for one, are misinformation, or are not taking a look at the core of a lot of issues. So it's just people quote these headlines as fact when it just shows you a very small slice of the overall story. So I don't know if that made any sense, but
yeah, just, so that gets you angry.
It does, for sure. It's just kind of like we're like fiends for like the next sensational story, or, you know, this headline can prove my point in the argument with my coworker or something. It's like, come on.
Well, I think, again, when you're looking at whether you're looking at content creation on, you know, on platforms like YouTube, or where you're looking at like media outlets, they're all trying to sell, right? Mm-hmm. They're all trying to sell. And it's a very, very saturated market. I think that's part of it. There's a lot of push, whether it's an editor of a media outlet or whether it's a content creator trying to put something up there on YouTube and, you know, mm-hmm. to be able then to make money.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain amount of influence by, you know, the algorithms and AI to push certain mm. things to the top, so that people then are going to be more likely to either click on that link or look at it, or, you know, even if they only watch a few minutes of the content or listen or read a few lines, you know, that for whoever's creating, whether it's the media news outlet or the actual individual content creator, that's going to gain them more visibility, and potentially if they have advertisers, they're going to get money that way as well, you know, for every pair of eyes. So this is a part of a bigger beast, I think. And I do agree with you.
Right.
And then the other thing that you see is titles that get recycled. Like, you'll see the same title get recycled with minor changes, like dozens and dozens of times, you know, like so-and-so destroys so-and-so in this argument.
Right.
You know, I'm just like, oh, for God's sakes,
oh,
you know?
Right.
Yeah. I don't know, whatever else they're going to create to grab people's attention. And like you said, this isn't new. And it wasn't just even tabloid newspapers. Newspapers used to kind of sensationalize and create sort of hyperbolic titles because they knew that that would get people to want to buy and find out more about what's
sure.
going on.
Sure.
But now this seems to be the rule rather than the exception. Yeah. And one can't seem to be able to resort to anything that resembles mundane, for lack
this
of a better
true.
Word.
And it is sad in a sense that you mentioned sort of creators or people with a YouTube page, they've sort of got to get into these, using these clickbait headlines to even compete, because as you say, it's so saturated. So I definitely follow people who I know, like, their style is not to, you know, like, they're honest people, whether they're reviewing. I watch a lot of musicians on YouTube, or, you know, a lot of sort of audio recording channels, or just musicians, guitar stuff in general. And yeah, they'll have to say things like, this is the worst guitar of all time, or this is the best guitar of all time. And then they'll say, okay, sorry about that sort of headline, but.
or things like, I'm done. I quit.
I'm done. Yes.
Yeah, I quit. I can't. Or
with the hand on the chin and the.
Yeah. Or it's like, is this the worst recording ever? And then like question mark, exclamation point. And you're like, oh, come on.
Stuff. Right. So
yeah,
I suppose it is the world we live in today.
It's the way things have been designed, for lack of a better word, mm-hmm. whether it's in terms of the economic structures or in when we're looking at online content,
mm-hmm.
it's also the way that they are pushing kind of competition. But I feel like everything else, it kind of will reach its peak, and then mm-hmm. people do become tired, because I know that after a while I get put, I'm like, no.
Right.
I mean, if you use that title so many times, I'm like, no. No.
Hopefully the pendulum will swing back the other way.
Yeah. I mean, we just kind of go into like the dark ages again in terms of our
right. Right.
In terms of our communications. I don't know.
Yeah.
We're very nearly heading that way. Anyway, what else, my friend? Anything else?
Those are sort of the main things that were on my mind. Yeah, I'm very interested to hear. I think you may have a few things or a couple of things you may have a gripe with.
I have a scroll, Paul. I have like a scroll of like 450 pet peeves, but for the sake of the show.
Sure. Well, you know, who knows if this episode goes well, maybe we'll have part two.
We may have part two, indeed. Well, no, I would say that I'm going to sort of, piggyback off of your comment about sort of mobile phone use, and you particularly in public. Mm-hmm. I take a lot of public transportation, and this is really not unusual in Europe. And I see behaviors just as bad, whether it's during a ride or getting off, say, a train or a bus or a tram. And they're just things that make me shake my head and, generally curse under my breath. Many curses. sometimes in different languages at once. So I think the things that I kind of notice, and I know we're supposed to just kind of filter them out, but I think when it's like an onslaught and you get it day after day, if you're particularly sensitive to certain things, then it becomes like you really like need to create a massive filter. But I think one of my biggest pet peeves are people who are having like FaceTime conversations on their phone in public, on a bus, in an enclosed environment. Because I find that to be like really the worst kind of attention seeking or like self-absorbed kind of attitude. It's really like, don't look at me, but look at me. Like, right. Don't look at me. Don't eavesdrop, but I know you can't help it.
Right.
And I would like to say that it's just younger teens that are doing this, but I've seen people.
Oh, I've seen some grown adults.
Doing these things. Yeah. And it's really, I'm not talking about somebody who is, again, I really want to emphasize this because I do want to make a distinction. We've all had to take our phone call in public or, text somebody. It's not like you're being normal, discreet, considerate. You're not having a really like a loud conversation.
Right.
Where you're hearing like things like, what are you doing? What are you wearing? Right. These kinds of, and I'm just like, oh God. So, I mean, I think these are the things like when I encounter this is really, really aggravating because I think there are few things, that sort of come to mind. A, nobody wants to take part of your conversation, but now we're forced to, now we're forced in it. Mm-hmm. B, I hate to say this, but you're not that interesting. And I think most of us aren't really that interesting in our day to day. We're not. No, they're like acting like they're unaware of how disruptive this is. And I think they are in fact very much aware. This is attention seeking as far as I'm concerned, especially when you're on packed transport. And I find that to be a really, really sort of selfish sort of, it's a kind of a narcissism and they know it kind of behavior.
Right.
Right. And then I think C, nothing is that generally, nothing is that deep or urgent unless somebody's like, wait, the house is being robbed, your grandmother's on fire. Those things should be like, okay, I can understand why people might get in a panic. But I mean, nothing is so deep or urgent that it can't wait until that person or those groups of people are actually off the bus or tram.
Right, right.
Or train or whatever, because people are just sitting there going, oh, great. There are 20 other people now who don't want to be involved in this conversation, but we're forced to endure it.
Sure, sure. You just want to be home. You don't even want to be on the train.
Yeah. And I mean, to me, it's again, there's a real distinction between individuals who need to respond or make a call to someone and they're being considerate and discreet about it versus those who are clearly doing it to be attention whores, pardon my, expression there, but that's, or they're just being willfully self-absorbed, And this is, again, one of just many kinds of examples of poor behavior whilst using mobile phones. But this is kind of very prevalent. And then the another one sort of mobile phone related, and you were talking about, people just sort of looking down on their phones the entire time. But what's worse is when they are walking down pedestrian areas, along sidewalks or in squares or whatever. And they only have one direction in which they're looking at, which is down.
Right.
First of all, this is a peril. This is going to be a peril to my life or yours, you know?
Sure.
And for me, this is a prime example of why nobody needs to actually wait for the zombie apocalypse. Because when you see, you know, sort of this awkwardly sort of walking aggressive at the same time, sort of slalom meanderings of individuals looking down, and you're like, well, there you go. The zombie apocalypse is right there, you know? And
for sure.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you know, some of them are like, I've seen a few, they're like really, they're looking down on their phone. They're really aggressive, you know? So the idea is I'm so important. And so what I'm doing right now on my phone is so busy that you, who's opposite me, are the one who has to get out of my way.
Right, right. The rest of us have to keep our heads up to not get hit by these.
Exactly.
Folks.
So I'm like, wait a minute, you are on the idiot's obstacle course and heading in directly in my path, and I'm the one who needs to get out of the way. Like, this is the kind of thing that just sort of boggles my mind.
Right.
You know, and if they do bump into you, then it's again like, you know, your example of the woman with her shopping trolley or shop, mm-hmm. who sort of just sort of like, oh, how dare you, you know, like that kind of attitude. And
exactly.
I'm going, I'm sorry, I didn't realize the street was in your name. Oh, it isn't. Oh,
exactly.
My bad. And the other thing is that they are often so cocky and confident that they can defy the odds of not getting run over by a vehicle, because many of times, you know, you see them still looking down on their phone whilst crossing a street. So I will tell you, it's really amazing the number of near misses that I've seen these people encounter. And rather than, like, you know, the light bulb coming on going, oh, I really should pay more attention around me, especially when I'm crossing the street, because this is stuff that you learn in primary school, you know, look both ways when crossing the street. So they don't, it doesn't, you know, because the person who's driving a vehicle is going to be the one accused of manslaughter if they get killed.
Right.
So this attitude then becomes pervasive that way, you know, like they're like, oh, well, they just have to break.
Right, you know? Right. They're further emboldened to
I won't lie, Paul, that every once in a while in my very wicked fantasy moments, just imagine them walking into a metal pole or lamppost, because
I have seen that happen.
Yeah, because if the odds work out, and this is, I'm sorry, people, but I'm just sharing my wicked fantasy. It's a fantasy, all right? But
it is a rant.
It's a rant.
I came here for.
Exactly. Yeah. So no, I don't really wish that on people, but you have moments where you're just like, oh my gosh, just do us all a favor.
Some people have to learn the hard way, you know?
Yeah. The very, very hard way.
There you go.
I mean, I don't know. I think the thing is that, you know, I feel like so many of us are stressed as it is, you know, we have our day to day to deal with, and it is stressful being in a big city. In particular, if anyone lives in a big city, you guys know how stressful it can be getting from one place to the other. And then on top of that, you have to then just deal with, and it is usually a smaller group of individuals that create that kind of misery for the rest of us.
Right.
So all it takes is like four people on a bus of like 100 to annoy the bleep out of you.
Yes, unfortunately, you know? A few can really mess up the whole thing for the many.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I know the advice is always like, well, just filter it out, ignore it. And I'm thinking, yep, I think my reaction is, okay, yes, fair enough. But also, why? Why do I have to ignore it? Why can't we sit there and actually address the gorilla in the room? Why do we have to be okay with this kind of behavior? Because when it piles on day to day, you get to a point where you really dread going in public.
Right.
I mean, I do at least, you know, because these kind of microaggressions pile on.
Mm-hmm. This is true. This is true.
Yeah.
Oh, it's definitely when you have to think, do I really don't want to go out? Maybe I can do all of these things in one day.
Yeah, I mean, there have been cases in my, definitely for me, where I'm like, I do not go. I mean, I can't, if I can at all avoid it, and generally I can't, I categorically do not go food shopping on a Saturday.
Good idea.
I would rather be dead tired at the end of my work or whatever and then go shopping rather than have to deal with the madness that is, you know, a weekend crowd.
Absolutely. No,
unfortunately, lots of other people have caught on to this idea.
Right. No, I try to go during the week if I can, but it's, you know, sometimes still pretty bad.
Yeah.
But Saturday, forget it.
Or go during like a lunch hour, you know, where you just can get the things that you need to avoid the crowds. But the fact that we have to become so strategic in so many instances to avoid the annoyances that pile on. And that's, you know, that's worth pointing out. Anyway, the other thing that I wanted to talk about, because it is still linked to public transportation, but not so much mobile phones, is people just sometimes their behavior towards other people. And in Europe, it's not uncommon to have on public transportation. And I guess it's also true in the States. You know, you have seats that are dedicated for older people or people who are disabled. And the idea is that, you know, the minute you see somebody who is clearly a lot older than you are and probably not as sprightly, that you would give up your seat. And this is, in some places, this is practice. In other places, this isn't. Likewise, you know, with queuing up to get on public transportation. So not so long ago, I experienced this. I was waiting for a bus, and there weren't that many people. There were maybe about five or six of us waiting for this bus. And there were about three women, I would say, of retirement age. And then there was a teenage girl who had come a bit later, and she was sat at the bus stop. And then when the bus arrived, she just pushed herself past me and these other women who had queued up to get on the bus, right? And she just kind of pushed past, yeah, I go first. We just kind of, you know, you're just kind of going, what the heck did just happen? And she was really boorish about it. And we all gave her a bit of a, I wanted to give her a bit of a what for, but I just could have just looked at her like, what? And her attitude was just sort of like, well, you guys are, I don't know what it was, but it was like, oh, you guys are going to be too slow. And I'm thinking, really? Because it's going to cost you all of not even maybe 10 seconds more.
Right.
And, you know, the surliness, this kind of attitude, I was like, where is this coming from? On the one hand, it's not unusual. She's a 15, 16-year-old. You know, that surliness seems to come with the territory, you know, that will play a part, you know. But I thought that this other thing maybe that's worth considering, because once I was sort of calmed down from being like literally just brushed aside, I just thought, okay, what is this about? Is this maybe a lack of agency or self-worth that's manifesting in other ways? And then because a lot of people feel like they don't have the ability to exercise their frustrations in a maybe more healthy manner, or maybe direct manner, or maybe because they feel like they don't, like I said, they don't have agency or self-worth, that this is sort of then coming out in other ways, in areas, especially in public, in the public sphere, where they feel they can let it out on people they don't know and get away with it.
Right. And possibly, you know, amongst their peers in school, this sort of behavior is rewarded, you know, being the first one, being the, you know, it's sort of like bully type of behavior. Which is sad, because decades ago, when I was a kid, you know, it was, you know, you respect people outside, especially your elders.
But I mean, we always had bullies. I mean, I think we always had rude and bullying people.
Sure. I was just going to say, not you wouldn't see it in public so much. If you did, it was like, oh my goodness. But now it's sort of, you can probably go out there and see that daily.
Yeah. And it also seems like there people just can get away. It's weird, because on the one hand, I feel like we live in a very punitive society. But on the other hand, I feel like there's so many behaviors that have there are no consequences. And I don't mean like in a punitive way, but there's no even social consequences for people's behaviors. So, I mean, I think these are things that are worth considering, because most of our pet peeves, at least the ones that we've aired, right, are dealing with behaviors in public spheres. And I guess my question is like, why are these tolerated when there's so many things we won't tolerate? Why are these behaviors so tolerated? It doesn't matter how annoying or bad that they are. But if we saw somebody throwing littering on the streets, we would say something nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we say something about that, but not about like the person who's having a really loud conversation,
right?
FaceTime conversation on public transportation?
Sure.
What creates that kind of dynamic where we say, oh, well, we can say that? Because is it because we've just come to a general consensus?
Mm-hmm. Right. Why do people sort of feel entitled to have a complete lack of shame in public? I don't know. It's a sad situation.
Well, I think the thing is, again, and I want to go back to the thing about consensus. So over the course of time, we begin to sort of accept certain things publicly and not accept other things, right? So this is where I say we have created a consensus either of ignoring or tolerating certain poor behaviors,
mm-hmm.
whether it's on social media, you know, in public, in politics, big tech behaviors, whatever it is, you know, we just kind of go, well, yes, you know, or we'll just have to ignore it. But there are other things we would not put up with. What creates that shift? I guess that's really my question. What creates that shift from putting up with something and accepting it or tolerating it to no longer tolerating it? We wouldn't tolerate, you know, overtly racist, sexist, bullying behavior anymore.
Right.
Right. And we've learned over time that certain things are just not okay to do.
Of course.
Right. And I guess the other questions are like, are there fears or are there fears of repercussion around some kind of public chastising? Because I do know when one person says something and then they're like five other people are like, thank God that person said something. And then they'll all sit there and nod their heads and go, yeah,
right.
You know, in agreement. But it takes like one person to do it. And I think most of the time we feared saying anything.
Sure. I think most people want to avoid confrontation out there as well. And I think also maybe there's been some sort of backlash in another way. You know, you see the person in a viral video complaining or giving people a hard time. They go too far and it turns into, you know, unfortunately the poor Karens, but, you know, people get called the Karen.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
I feel bad for all the Karens out there.
But yeah.
All you know what I mean? So there's that backlash in the other sense.
Yeah.
You know, I need to speak to your manager kind of thing.
Yeah. And of course, if things get uploaded, we never know how much editing has been done. So we see the context only in the way that this has been shown to us.
Right.
And then the court of public opinion can become very, very hostile. You know, it can sway easily from one direction and into another. So people often also don't have recourse. So if you somebody records something, they can go in there and edit certain things out, or they can add details that aren't necessarily there.
Right.
And that's the other thing we have to be really careful about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a sad state of affairs right there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, there's a part of me that goes, you know, if we look at it in historical context, I think we've always seen throughout the ages. It doesn't matter whether it was the Roman Empire or the Middle Ages or even in more recent times where there was always poor behavior in public. I don't think that has necessarily changed. Mm-hmm. What I feel, though, now is that, and I think we can really make a correlation to technology, is that things have sort of amplified in some ways. There's an amplification of information, of noise, of all these other factors and behaviors that I feel in some ways, I don't know whether they're just like they're rewarded.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's almost, you know, like the phones have allowed people to sort of think that they're invisible. You know, or, you know, promote antisocial behavior, not looking out for your fellow human. Yeah, it's definitely sped the whole thing up, I think.
Yeah, the other thing is, though, and I hear, you know, I've heard this excuse as well, where I hear people saying, oh, but I'm really socially awkward and I have a lot of anxiety when I go out in the real world. And there's a part of me that wants to be compassionate and understanding. And there's a part of me that wants just to go, for God's sakes. get a bit of resilience going. I mean, we are all socially awkward, in one form or another. There are all kinds of social situations in which we might find ourselves and going, oh, okay, this is very uncomfortable, you know.
Right.
What it's called growing the F up.
Right.
And learning how to behave in public and learning the fact that there are just certain things that when you are in public spheres that you just want to be mindful of. And like, if you want to put on a pair of, you know, noise canceling earphones or headphones, sorry, and you don't want to deal with the public when you go out and that's the best way that you can deal with it, that's, I don't care. But what I do care about is if you then start behaving in a way where you're like, not mindful at all of your behavior towards others. So then I'm just like, okay, mate, then just stay at home. Just stay at home and don't ever leave the house.
Right. Order everything on Amazon.
Exactly. Whatever it is, you know, get all of your Deliveroos and whatever else it is that you need, you know, and don't ever socially interact. It's not easy. And I feel like in so many ways, you know, all the anxiety that generations younger than us continue to feel is A, because they're bombarded with just way too much stuff. B, because they don't actually know, many of them have never really been taught because their parents haven't even been able to do it, is to actually hold a conversation.
Right.
And it means also having uncomfortable, sometimes uncomfortable discussions and still being able to be civil about it. I feel like there's just so many basic tools that are not really encouraged. And sometimes I wonder whether that's by design.
Right.
So people are more and more isolated from each other. They don't actually connect.
This is true, which does not help with socially awkward people.
Exactly. And I'm like thinking, you know, there are always going to be people who really can engage and know how to engage and it comes more naturally. And there are people who don't, but we all have to learn how to be able to behave in certain ways in public. And we can't always use the excuse of like, oh, I'm just socially awkward. Well,
sure, you know what I mean? Sure. No, like anything, it takes practice. You know, you've got to learn to grow and try to be an adult if you can, especially if you are above 18.
Very good.
Well, there's a lot to think about there, my friend. There's a lot to unpack.
But there's a bit to, and also no, you know, but I think these are just rants, you know, and sometimes we just need to get them off our chest. And now that you guys have heard about our rants and considerations, maybe you'll find some of these relatable. Perhaps others don't bother you at all. And maybe some of you might object to the things that Paul and I find objectionable. And guess what? That's okay.
Wow.
You're entitled to your opinions and ideas, and
this
we can
true.
Respectfully agree to disagree, because I think that's how we have a civil discussion, right, Paul?
That's right. That's part of growing.
Exactly. I suppose the questions, you know, is how do we, you know, how do we or I or you not let these things, especially seemingly persistent and pervasive kind of behaviors behaviors, for lack of a better term, that not get to you? How do we not let these things get to us, right? When there's a general public consensus of what is deemed annoying, disruptive, and or rude, especially to the point of like, you know, exacerbating people's patience or the stress levels, why can't we politely but firmly push back as a collective? That's one big lingering question.
Agreed. Yes.
Yeah. And if there are things that are sort of more universally frustrating for us, that stress and bother us, i.e. people leaving their shopping trolleys in the middle of the aisle so that nobody can pass you by. And in turn, you know, this kind of impacts our day-to-day well-being, because it's not just that one thing, right? It's not just that one woman leaving her shopping trolley or her cart in the aisle. It's that it happens again. And again and again, and you see the same kind of behaviors again and again and again. So why is it seemingly so much harder to change said behavioral nuisances than perhaps it used to be? I don't know. This is just a question. And then do you think that certain issues and attitudes are more pervasive because we as a society are just simply accepting of it? Or is there also something else at play? You know, again, food for thought. Worth asking. So these are just some of my questions, and we'll be back with some of my closing thoughts And in the meantime, y'all just have a ponder. Welcome back, everyone. All right, Paul, how are you doing after a run? Did you have to sit down, have a cold drink, take a cold shower, walk around the block, punch a tree? Please do not punch a tree.
No, I wouldn't do that. I definitely had a cold drink. Had to do some breathing exercises there. But as I was mentioning, you know, it's sort of against my nature to rant or sometimes speak up. But I think it's important for even people like me to sort of come out of their shell and have these talks, you know, like you're saying.
I think having a rant is important. I have it because it's a way to kind of just like get it out of your system, rather than it sort of being bottled up to the point of explosion. Yeah.
Definitely.
So something that I wanted to touch upon is this idea, which we actually did touch upon, which is this idea of both common sense or common courtesy. And I'd argue that this is an oxymoron, though some might argue that the notion of common sense and courtesy can actually be culturally subjective. But all the same, I would go so far as to argue that, at least by Western standard, these notions, however well-meaning, especially in public spaces, have never truly been. And what we may agree in theory ought to be is rarefied because of a widespread, and I'd kind of add, a near pernicious sense of personal exceptionalism. It is the me-ism, where greed, narcissism, and I think the worst excesses of capitalism, be it laissez-faire, cronyism, corporatism, nepotism, etc., have not only provided fertile grounds for unchecked, aggressive, or poor behavior, but indeed is a place where this is going to be rewarded, lauded, exhibited, and showcased. In turn, this gives us a sense of something to be fulfilled and emulated, but I'd reckon that this too is yet another means of keeping the masses distracted, bread and circuses, from looking at things that really matter, that are worth and indeed in need of discussion, and especially addressing things that are difficult, complex, and perhaps even uncomfortable to talk about and dissect. And as I said, these things can be uncomfortable not only because we might not come to a consensus about how or even if we ought to work towards resolving them, or perhaps because they unearth more deeply rooted problems, but also because they might force us to be introspective and deal with our own cognitive dissonance, bias, or prejudice. This ultimately means that the first meaningful changes we need to see begins with ourselves. If we all did that, I'd gather that we'd actually be much more civil and less self-absorbed in society. And because the majority of people still struggle to get by as we are mired in mountains of political, bureaucratic, and economic ineptitude, not to mention the daily theatrics, of faux civility, if not downright incivilities among so-called politicians, leaders, experts, etc., it's not so difficult to see how these kinds of boorish attitudes spill over into society at large. Yet others, knowingly and willfully, act out just on the border of being antisocial, but well out of reach of anything that we can deem as being unlawful. And these are the sort of inconsiderates, it's a made-up word that I've just done, and these are the inconsiderates that public exhibitionists, the microaggressionists, the all the world's my social media stage, and the rest of you are just mere extras in it. So again and again, we seemingly put up with these things, but why? Perhaps we don't say anything because we fear there might be some kind of verbal or worse, physical reprisal or altercation. Perhaps we eschew anything that might cause public spectacle. After all, everyone seems to be at the ready to record and upload everything on social media within minutes of it, even the dinkiest event. And from there, things quickly tend to escalate. They get put out of context or become further skewed and nasty. None of us want to be that person. You know, the one who goes around finger wagging at the person who cuts a queue somewhere and then takes all the time in the world to complete a transaction. Nor dare ask the mobile phone absorbed parent to please tell their child not to mistake the bus for their personal playground or that their airplane seat is not a rocking chair. And so, in holding our tongues and our thoughts and trying to exercise endless patience, all whilst shaking our heads, we too might find that one day we might flip our collective lids. Why is it that there is far, far more literature and advice about how to disengage, detach, and not let the barrage of my daily microaggressions bother you? And I'm not saying that these aren't valuable, because they really can be. But how about more press and promotion of highlighting ways in which we can thoughtfully and productively address these poor behaviors, regardless of age or demographics, so that we interact in a more conscientious manner with one another, especially in public spaces and at work? I'm not saying that this would be a magic wand solution and fix everything, but it could certainly help recalibrate and inject a much needed dose of common courtesy and civility. Well, now that you've heard some of our gripes at QC, maybe you even have some of your own pet peeves that you'd like us to air. And if you've enjoyed our rant session, let us know, and we might do this again. But in the meantime, Paul, what do we have in store for our next episode?
So, next time we'll be discussing sleep, the land of Nod, Shala, as they say in Irish.
Or lack thereof.
Indeed. We'll look at how sleep has become one of the most studied aspects of our well-being and why so many of us suffer from poor sleep and have sleeping ails. We'll consider where there is consensus and where there is contradiction around sleep and how various industries promote products and methods promising us a good 40 winks, generally with mixed results.
Could it be that these studies, products, and methods are overlooking other relevant contexts or even inconvenient details? Does the general lack of proper sleep reveal something more problematic within our modern world?
I gather these are rhetorical questions, right? As is our habit at QC, we'll try to unearth some of the issues around a given topic while also looking for connections to the bigger picture. And we'll consider that the modern notions of how 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep often fail to take into account other important factors which make sleep so difficult.
On that note, on behalf of Paul and myself, thank you for tuning in and giving us a listen. We really appreciate it and hope that our humble little podcast will encourage you and others to have your own quantum conversations. Until then, be well, Godspeed, and keep those little hamster wheels in your mind spinning.